On the heels of dire warnings about the possibility of mass killings in East Timor, these warnings coming from independence activist Jose Ramos Horta, President Clinton has issued his strongest warnings yet, suggesting that if Indonesia does not restore order, civil order in East Timor, there could be dire consequences from the international community. We're going to be talking about what's going on in East Timor and what ought to be done about it, as we're joined now by Imran Anwar, founder of Imran Net Services in New York, pioneer of the internet email in Pakistan, and of course a well-known media expert on India, Pakistan, and Southeast Asia. Hi, Imran.
Hello, George. How are you?
Well, first of all, bring us up to date a bit. What is happening and why in East Timor?
Basically, George, the current situation has been well summarized in your statement a few minutes ago. But the situation, as you know, has taken the turn that you and I had discussed, the likelihood of it taking, which being that the referendum that took place basically was more pro-independence than some of the anti-independence people would have liked. Now, these are people who have been armed and dangerous for a long time, even though they're a small part of the population, but either because of the government not taking any action against them properly or actually liking the actions that they are taking has led to a lot of bloodshed that's taking place, with the situation potentially getting worse by the minute. And we are at a stage where there is a lot of world anger and condemnation taking place against Indonesia for not stopping the bloodshed. It's not that Indonesia is being directly accused of causing the bloodshed or carrying out the attacks, but more so of not doing enough to stop them.
Well, what has happened? When last we spoke, there was going to be a referendum. They were going to vote in East Timor on whether or not they wanted to remain part of Indonesia or they wanted to be, to separate from Indonesia. And as I understand it, the vote overwhelmingly went in favor of separating from Indonesia. Now, that was supposed to be the final word. And what has happened since? Well, who is perpetrating the violence on the East Timorese, and from what position?
Actually, when you look at it, the irony is that the perpetrators are actually local residents of East Timor. They are the ones who are not in favor of independence. Now, that may be for practical reasons, because they might one could always argue that there are significant number of reasons for East Timor not to be independent, because it does not have the wherewithal to stand on its own as a nation, even though the people might have an identity that they would like to portray through having a nationhood. But the fact is that eventually nations have to learn to stand on their own two feet. And to do that, they might need resources or a population base with either the abilities to export knowledge or goods or what have you, or raw materials, which enable the country to survive and to thrive as a living entity, so to speak. A lot of people feel that East Timor as a region does not have any of those not qualities, but essential requirements, if I may use that word. Since that is the case, there are people who are East Timorese who might not favor independence at all. There will also be people who might have come over from the mainland a long time ago, who might also not want to break away. There might be people who might just be troublemakers, because they might be looking to exploit any uncertainty or any opportunity to basically wage war and commit crimes. So you have all of these factors at work, especially in a situation where it's a significantly small piece of territory that you're speaking about, with a very, very small population. So you could really get away with a lot of killing, etc., before it becomes a Holocaust-level event in terms of the world eyes. So they're very lucky, actually, in East Timor, that the world has noticed what's going on and is actually paying attention to it.
As I understand it, the violence is being perpetrated particularly by these militia bands that are in favor of, or anti-separatist bands, I guess is the way they're being described, and they are in favor, obviously, of remaining with Indonesia. Mostly, then, they would be Indonesians of Muslim of the Muslim persuasion, the Muslim Indonesians, and most of the East Timorese are Catholic, and left over from the Portuguese occupation, and in what 1975 or something when they got when they got back when they became free of Portugal, then Indonesia invaded, and took over the place, and there's never really been any. Any peaceful coexistence, always under the under the surface, there's been tension and separatist movements and everything else in East Timor. I mean, this vote was inevitable, and so I guess the question is, let me get my thoughts in order a bit here. But let me ask first of all, what prompted Habibie in Indonesia to allow for this separatist vote? Given that it was virtually a done deal that they would overwhelmingly vote for separate to be separate from Indonesia?
Excellent series of questions, actually, George. I'll try to address the whole issue, but I'll have to take a step back then. In terms of the fact that Indonesia is a predominantly Muslim nation, and this territory tends to be more significantly Christian, the fact of the matter is that in this particular case, while there are different religions involved, it's really less about religious warfare. It's less about being Muslims versus Jews in the Middle East, for example, or Protestants against Catholics in another part of Europe. The issue here is really more about territorial integrity of a nation and of a group of people wanting independence, whether they have the resources to survive independently or not, and another group of people, which will, I'm sure, includes the Indonesian Muslims, but actually, ironically, there are Christian local East Timorese people who are also part of those militias. So that's how, ironically, religion is really not the fact, or religious persecution was not the reason that the East Timorese wanted to get
no,
away.
No. And that wasn't the implication. But I'm just saying that generally creates a cultural collision and suspicions and
right.
so on that probably prompted in part not wanting to be, in part not feeling put upon as a minority,
right.
and in part prompting this vote, which was overwhelming for separatism. And the fact is, now let me ask you about this. The fact is that, as we kind of touched on, this was a Portuguese colony, East Timor. And in 75, somehow or another, they had won their independence and Portugal left. Indonesia immediately invades. Now, as I understand, you and I have talked about this in the context of the situation in Kashmir, they did so in violation of the international law here, that allowed this country to, in other words, they annexed East Timor in violation, I think, of the international law. Am I correct?
George, it's a good point you bring out about Kashmir, and we linked to that briefly. The point to remember is that unlike how when the British left, they left with a set of rules saying that the Muslim majority areas would become Pakistan, and that is why Kashmir should be a part of Pakistan, what happened in Portugal is they did not leave the East Timorese with independence. They basically became landlords who basically abandoned the buildings that they had tenants living in, so to speak. So there was no formal independence given to the region. Just because your occupier gets up and leaves, just because nobody's holding a gun to your head does not mean you are free. And so it was sort of a state that should have existed or could have existed, or the East or Portugal could have had a more formal handing over of power, and also setting up some level of negotiations and discussions with Indonesia, saying we are giving freedom to this territory. This territory is right in your backyard, so to speak, and this is where a lot of your population goes, and there are a lot of people from this area that live or work in your country. So let's come up with a region that is stable. They give independence, they have independence, and they have some level of economic means of survival based upon an exchange or trading mechanism that we will put in place together. That is not what the Portuguese did. They basically upped and left, and Indonesia, like many countries, when there's a volcanic eruption in the middle of the ocean somewhere, creating a little island of 2 miles wide, countries have almost gone to war over those, as we saw in Europe.
But basically, there was kind of a UN-sanctioned independence for East Timor. As a matter of fact, I'm trying to think when it happened, but Portugal and Indonesia, in fact, signed some kind of a UN-sponsored agreement that allowed East Timor to choose about autonomy and independence and so on. So I suppose that was fairly recent. But
right, and that is what plays into the answer to the question why Mr. Habibi would do this. Now, this is actually a good example. I know the desired results have not been achieved. East Timor is still, if not occupied, is still going through the throes of independence or the throes of bloodshed. But the fact of the matter is, on previous occasions, I have made the statement that if somebody wants, and sometimes I have come across as being sounding oversimplistic of these global complex issues, but I have not said things tongue-in-cheek, but deliberately when I have said, George, it's a matter of leadership or a matter of making a practical decision, and if there are people with the leadership skills or have their backs against the walls or have just had enough, some of these global issues can be solved in less than a week. Mm-hmm. And I am so happy to see that the Israeli government, the Israeli Prime Minister, has proven me correct by showing that once you agree on this thing, that peace is the answer, and we're going to go through this peace process no matter how many car bombs are blowing up anywhere. He actually has arranged for the handover of territory to the Palestinians ahead of schedule. So here's a nation, two nations, that it took us 50 years to get them to the table, but when they decided that we are going to fix the problem, in less than a week you can have a solution. And the same applies to Kashmir. If the Indian government decides that it wants a solution to the problem, it wants to do the right thing, they would do it, and it would take less than a week. So, Mr. Habibi, both from the fact that it's a losing battle, number one, number two, they have enough scandals going on the mainland, number three, his own position is not very secure, and all of these issues and all of these concerns helped push him in the direction where it made sense to let the people make a decision. Now, there may have been hope that they would not all sort of unanimously say we want independence. There may have been a hope that there would be enough leeway for the two nations to have some sort of economic dependence agreement. And they're also wise enough and smart enough to know that really the territory cannot survive with Indonesian influence, even if it's called an independent territory. Perhaps they also were hoping that even if there is a vote for independence, once it's actually implemented, it might agree to be an autonomous state with an identity of its own, but still somewhat under the Indonesian umbrella. So these are all the things that he has sort of hoped will happen in the background while giving the people the right to a vote, so doing the right thing, making sure the world sees that they're doing the right thing. And those were the hopes that he had, I believe.
Yeah, in the meantime, it's pretty clear that nearly 80% of the East Timorese rejected autonomy. They wanted to be a separate nation, whatever their however practical that is from in terms of having any economic base to function on, and so on. And these militia bands are being backed, it is being reported anyway, pretty much by the Indonesian army. And perhaps they are rogue officers to some degree, because it appears... And
that
I'm wondering what you think. It appears that Habibi and maybe even the head of the army himself, it appears that they may have lost control here or are not in a position to enforce anything. And so they have to kind of go along with this, whatever they would prefer. Maybe that's where their leanings are, but it looks like Habibi is walking a fine line, as you say. He's got other things to worry about, scandals and the possibility that his popularity is waning. He doesn't seem to have the power, and the head of the military appears to be struggling to control officers who may be, in fact, supporting and backing this militia action.
Absolutely, and... George, that's a very valid point, and that's exactly what is possibly happening there, because similar things can have been known to happen both in the Middle East and in even in the recent conflict between India and Pakistan, where the Pakistani Prime Minister may not even have been aware that there might be elements of the Pakistani military that would not just morally but even possibly materially, quietly, unofficially support freedom fighters in Kashmir. So those things will always happen. By the same token, we in the U.S. have been very lucky not to have problems like that. But when people like Timothy McVeigh, with previous army backgrounds, etc., can go around building, blowing up buildings and killing American children and citizens, the risk is that if any of these movements takes the momentum of its own, you will always find people, no matter whether they're wearing a uniform of that particular country or not, can be the rogue elements that would support some insurgency or some rogue actions like that.
We wouldn't get much backing, though, if we, and we don't, even in cases where I think it's much more subtle, the Philippines or something, not the Philippines, Puerto Rico. But we wouldn't get much support if we invaded Grenada, as we did, and then kept it. And then the people were all in an uproar and wanted to get rid of us, and then we put some kind of a, we said, okay, go ahead and vote, and then we had 80% of the population voting for us to leave, and then we turned a blind eye to a very small minority of pro-Americans ravaging and pillaging and murdering. We wouldn't get much support from the international community.
I agree, George, yeah. And I'm not saying that the U.S. military machine would spring into action to support that 5 or 10% or 20% of the...
But isn't the difference, though, that given that we had determination,
right,
to say, hey, enough is enough, we go down there and take care of business. That would be taken... In other words, that would be solved. We wouldn't say, well, we really don't seem to be able to control it. We would go down there and stop it and then get out of there, which is what, you know, something along the line. We have the power to do that. What I'm saying is it appears there are one or two realities here. Either the head of the country, Habibie, and his commander of the Indonesian Armed Forces, I think his name is Wiranto, either they don't have the power to control what's going on, or they don't have the will, or they don't have the desire, and so the international community is saying to them, either you get things under control down there, or we're going to have to do it for you.
That's a good point, George, and one of the risks with that approach is, I totally agree with President Clinton's statement, basically telling the Indonesians to get the house in order, and if that is the will of the people, to make sure that it gets executed. And that's exactly what you and I have talked about, and what I have always asked, that there should not be a dual standard. If that is the right way to do things, and I think it is, then we should be doing the same thing in Kashmir, which actually has been on the books and on the table for 50 years. And that is, hopefully, this might lead us to a world where the right thing will get done, both because political leaders like the Prime Minister of Israel and Yasser Arafat of the Palestinian Authority can show that where there is a will, there's not even a way. It's less than a week's work to make things happen, and you do not lose popularity, you do not lose support, you do not lose face, you do not get assassinated if you do the right thing. And both nations are coming out stronger. The ironic thing will be, if you and I do another radio chat in, let's say, 5 years, we might find the Palestinians and the Israelis are like fighting together against some external enemy, for example, and it would be hard to see that 5 years ago, these people, much like the French and the Germans and the British today.
Here's the other problem they have in Indonesia. They have other separatist movements that are certainly not as a result of recent invasions or ethnic differences or religious differences. They are Muslim regions. I think it's Aceh, up in the north. It's an oil-rich area, potentially. And so the concern for Indonesia would be, among other things, not only is this kind of a slap in their national pride, in the face of their national pride, if this province separates, but it is also potentially a catalyst for separatist movements apparently all over this kind of disjointed country, nothing but a conglomerate of islands of Indonesia.
Absolutely, George, and you and I have discussed this before, even with relation to India, which has several separatist movements, which might be the flames of which might be fanned by doing the right thing in Kashmir. Now, I'm not saying that I totally, as you know, my stance is that Kashmir is a territory that should have its right to self-determination, and the people should decide. And at the same time, I do not say that the Indians basically have to give up every province that stands, much like if the state of Virginia tomorrow stands up and says we want freedom from the United States. Those things you have to take in the context of what the circumstances are. So the countries do feel that risk when they, if they let one portion go or one state go, that the others will try to do the same thing.
Let me ask, because we're going to run out of time, let me ask a couple questions real quick. One is, suppose that Kashmir, for the sake of the argument, just is an extremely isolated area and region of the world that is very difficult for the Western powers to do much about in terms of logistics and everything else. And say, for the sake of the argument, that just circumstantially, Timor, East Timor, is located in an area where they can more effectively do, you know, have impact and deal with the situation. The practical reality might be you fix what you can, and some things you can't fix because of the of many circumstances. But that doesn't mean you don't fix anything. You fix what you can.
Then, George, I have basically a dual answer to that, and that's a good question. My dual answer to that is, one, if you are picking and choosing which thing you consider right, then you're actually again setting up anger and resentment in maybe, let's say, the Muslim population of the world.
Well, now let me make sure I'm clear here before you answer that. I'm not saying that you're saying this is right and that one's not right. I'm just saying that you say, you know, we can go in and fix this. In other words, we can go in and take care of business in Panama or Grenada, or even in push Iraq out of Kuwait, but we can't do much about China, or during the Cold War we couldn't do much about Russia. I mean, there's certain things you just have to know you can't fix. Maybe just logistically we
Correct.
Can't do much about Kashmir, but because East Timor is right off the coast of Australia, we can do something.
Correct. And that's what I would answer then, George, still with a dual answer, which I'll adapt now to this to your modified question, and that would be that if U.S. policy is Mr. Prime President of Indonesia, I am telling you to get your act in order and get these people's rights that they have won and let them do what they want, or else, then I would expect the President of the United States to do the same thing for an issue like Kashmir that has been on the table and on the books for 50 years. Now, on the second part of the answer, I would be highly, highly against any statement by any government or military authority or even the media from saying, oh, well, the U.S. cannot go in because it's a little complicated. Because the message then you are sending to somebody like Osama bin Laden or anybody else in North Korea would be, oh, because I am a resident in a geographical area where the U.S. Army cannot come down, that means I can do basically what I want. So my question to you then would be, if the Afghanis or Mr. Osama bin Laden starts compiling or producing chemical weapons for delivery to the United States using North Korean missiles being built in some remote, very difficult region of North Korea, would it not be urgent and important and necessary for the United States to make sure that it went in there and destroyed those facilities? I'm sure we would do that.
We might be able to, and we might not, and we might have the technology to do it. Maybe we could target them somehow. But the fact is, North Korea does present a particular problem that we have a very difficult time addressing. There are certain realities, whereas we went after Iraq and pushed them out of Kuwait, we would have a very difficult time unseating the communist government in North Korea, for example.
Absolutely, and we don't have to do that, but the point I am raising is that if there is a threat to world peace, mm-hmm. you go in and you take care. You do not make a statement and say, you know something, I'm afraid of going fighting in the rocky
No, and believe me, nobody makes that statement.
Right, no,
and I was just saying that
but
it's...
But there is a perception, George.
Yeah,
that is
yeah,
my fear.
Yeah.
There is a perception growing in the rest of the world when we do our hand-wringing but debating whether we should go in and will there be U.S. casualties or not. Why do we have an army? If I join the army, I know I am taking a chance
yeah.
that I might have to die for my country.
But then, of course, that comes down to what is in the national interest, and that's gotten very cloudy. You might make the case that Kosovo and Bosnia were in the national interest because we were part of the NATO alliance. It's very difficult to figure out why we were in Somalia, why we went to Haiti, and why we are involved in East Timor, except that you have to say that there is a concern in the United Nations about human rights violations.
George, the answer to that question in one word is leadership. Mm-hmm. If we are the leaders of the free world, if the United States wants to, has a desire to, and believes in playing the role of leader of the free world that will have a better tomorrow at the turn of the century and into the years in the future, it will have to take those actions. Some of that might be risky, some of them might be difficult, some of them might mean that we would have to watch CNN to see what's going on instead of Melrose Place, but those are decisions that a nation has to make, and with leaders in place who know that they have a role in history more than just impeachment hearings, etc.
Now, President Clinton has not said, if you don't get things together down there, we're going to have to come down there and invade. What he is saying is that there would be consequences, you know, that their credibility is being damaged, the Indonesian credibility worldwide is being damaged, that there may be, we might put financial pressure on them, cut off funds, but it appears what President Clinton and the world community is asking of Indonesia is not so much get out because they voted,
right,
but get restore
absolutely
civil order and don't allow these roving bands of thugs and killers to impose their will on this area, even whatever else happens and however else you resolve the issue of their separate autonomy or desire to be a separate country.
Absolutely, George. And my comments about President Clinton's legacy notwithstanding, I think he did the right thing, and that is exactly what I am saying, that a leader as like the President of the United States and a leader of the free world like the United States itself should not even have to do more than say, fix the problem or we'll have to do something about it, not necessarily go making threats. If you have to make threats, you're not really a superpower. All you have to be able to do is say, I am concerned about what you are doing, and if you don't fix it, we will find a way to fix it. That is all the leader of the United States should have to do, and that is all the United States should have to do, because we have to lead by example.
Well, Imran, we are all out of time, but thank you, sir, as always, and take care, and you and I'll talk soon, of course.
Thank you, sir.
Imran Anwar, founder of ImranNet Services in New York, pioneer of the Internet email in Pakistan, and of course a well-known media expert on India, Pakistan, and Southeast Asia.